Hello.
Hi.
Hi, friends.
Hi, friends. And hi, friend.
Hello, Zahora.
Welcome back to Stacked, everyone, the podcast about life and books and life with books. How are you, Amanda?
I'm not good.
Why?
Because this morning, guys, I was cutting a mango.
Oh, God, yeah.
Do you know, I bought this mango a week ago, waited for it to ripen because I want to make mango sorbet.
Oh, nice.
But without all the sugar, you know?
It's so healthy.
You know, and it's so good.
It's giving Nora Smith.
Don't. You know, I'm obsessed. And she has lupus.
Does she?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So I really relate to her. But yeah, so then I come to cut that mango and I just cut right through my finger.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm in pain. Yeah. Obviously, it's minor, but.
It's not minor, guys. She's bandaged up, okay? Our girl is down. Our girl is down.
I'm down bad.
Yeah. Our girl cut herself to the quick. But still made it here, yeah, which, you know, yeah, well done.
Yeah, this is how much I love to talk about books, guys.
Still showed up. We love to see it.
Yeah, but otherwise, I'm doing it. I'm a bit tired. I feel a bit burnt out.
Yeah. Yeah, right there with you in terms of the burnout, honestly. Mm.
I thought you were going to show me your finger.
Me too. No, just the psychological.
Yeah. The psychological cuts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly that.
Right there with you. Yeah. Any reading? No.
No reading.
Done some buying.
Oh my God, so much buying. I actually need to stop. I have a problem.
I want to hear about it.
I have a problem.
You know, I've never asked you this.
What?
Like, what have you been buying?
Oh, like.
Because I'm sure we do more buying than
actually reading. And you know what? Because I recently, I say recently, probably like a month and a half ago now, got a new bookshelf. So now I feel as though it's my duty. I'm like, I need to fill this
you
up like now.
What's it there for?
Exactly. Every time I make an unnecessary book purchase, I'm just like, but I have shelves
you
to
need
fill.
Brothers, you yeah. need sisters, siblings.
I'm trying to build a community here. So, yeah, just lots of that, and then especially just like at work, sometimes my lunch break, I just love to walk to the bookshop and just you know, browse shelves, de-stress a little bit, and like try and remember what life is all about, because I'm not gonna lie, recently, and not just like work but like in general, just like the general climate of the world at the moment, I'm just like, I can't do it. Everything is going to shit, everything is terrible, and I think for me, I'm at a point where I'm like, but then is there any undoing this? Is there actually any undoing of the current state of everything? And I mean the current state of our health services, the current state of like political climate in general, the current state of the housing crisis, the current state of like
the fact that there's no one to vote for.
Exactly. The fact that there is no one to vote for, nowhere to turn to. Where are we going to go for a spite? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's starting to feel a little bit like futile to me, I feel like, recently. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm just trying to, you know, keep my self focused on whatever little good there is in the world at the moment, and just try and, you know, keep my head up.
What has been keeping you your head up?
Girl, nothing.
You hear what I just said?
Nothing. I'm still searching. Yeah. I am still currently searching, but you know what? We always have books. We always have fiction. So that's what I'm turning to at the moment.
Yeah.
I say that, but what I'm really turning to is TikTok for hours every night. So
another problem. Another problem. I'm starting to feel it's not just that all these things are happening in the world, but I just don't know what to. I feel like I've just become performative. Like I be saying things, but then what am I doing? But yeah, what can we do?
What can we do? Like, so, for example, even with, like, something as simple as, like, rent prices, we all know it's egregious. Everybody knows it's egregious. Everybody knows it's getting out of hand. Even with things like groceries, why is Tesco, like, why are they announcing, like, a profit of, like, 800 million or something ridiculous? I might have made that up. It might have been 80. But they, like, it was big. It was big. And I'm like, how are you exactly like pulling in profits like this at a time when everybody is struggling? So when we go into Tesco and like it's, I don't know, a pack of onions are now like $1.89 or like whatever when it used to be a pound. And we're just like, oh, well, you know, what are we going to do? It's like, people are profiting from this. Like, there's not going to be, there's no kind of way that these people are going to be like, oh, you know what, actually, we've made enough and people are struggling. So let's, like, you know, let's
bring the prices down.
Yeah, let's bring the prices down. Prices never go down.
Until people start
dying. In the history of ever, prices of everything have never, ever gone down. That's not how it works.
That's the history of ever, guys.
Exactly. That is the history of ever. Prices don't go down. These things are never reversed. I feel like the only time it's ever happened was when America had that, banking like crisis,
the Lehman Brothers,
yeah. Who knows? And then the bubble burst, and then they
the
had
bubble
to...
burst.
Then, I don't know, I've only watched The Wolf of Wall Street once, okay? Like, I don't claim to know things.
I didn't understand the first time.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know, I'm just like, oh. Yeah, yeah, I'm fed up basically.
It's okay.
I'm fed up, so yeah, that's where I'm at.
That's part one, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, yeah, so that's how I am. 10 minutes later. But yeah, yeah. Shall we talk about books
now? Let's talk about books now.
Yeah, like, let's talk about books now. This is turning to something else. So for this penultimate episode, we're going to be talking about Akweke Emesi. Who's probably one of the more contemporary authors we've done.
Yeah.
No, actually, we've done a few. We did
Ocean Vuong, Sally Rooney.
Sally Rooney, and then now Akweke as well.
I think that's quite, we've been balanced.
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, I feel like that's good. But so, Akweke Emesi is a Nigerian Igbo writer, poet, memoirist, visual artist. They do a lot. Multi-hyphenate.
Rapper.
Yeah, oh yeah, rapper, of course. Deity.
Facts.
Yeah, like all sorts, they do it all. They grew up in Abba, Nigeria, and they were raised by an Igbo father and a Sri Lankan mother who I believe was Tamil. Yeah, which is like a blend of cultures that I find really fascinating to start off with, but then that also obviously really inspires and informs their work and their aesthetics as well. So they've spoken about not having the easiest childhood exactly. I think there was kind of like a lot of political unrest and whatever else happening in the state while they were growing up. And they've mentioned how storytelling was a huge form of escapism for them, just from like all of these troubles and issues that were going on, and helped develop their imagination from a very young age. And then I think at 16, they moved to the US to study, I think to go to veterinary school, right?
Really?
Yeah, which is really interesting to me. Yeah, I think so. Okay. I don't know if I made that up, but yeah, to go to veterinary school. And were exposed to lots of new influences and perspectives. And yeah, I think, I don't think they finished that degree though, I'm not going to lie.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't think they did.
Yeah.
I'll fact check this. But yeah, as a writer, they're like super, super dedicated to pushing and blurring loads of boundaries, especially when it comes to genres. They've challenged themselves, I think, to write across genres. Mm. So I think they have like at least one book of every genre or something.
Really?
I mean, in the sense where like they've written
YA,
poetry,
nonfiction. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So I think it's almost like a personal challenge to themselves.
For some reason, I was thinking sci-fi, but I actually think that their writing does cover.
Exactly.
Oh yes, actually, I believe they have done sci-fi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think they have as well.
Yeah,
yeah. So they've done all these bits. They also identify as non-binary, which is why we refer to them as they, them. These are their pronouns. And consider themselves to be an Ogbanje, which is like a really fascinating concept in Igbo cosmology. That kind of refers to children who, quote unquote, come and go and are kind of part human, part spirit, one foot in the afterlife type vibes. So I guess like the Western equivalent would be like a changeling. Yeah,
I've never heard of that.
What, changeling?
It's
also kind of like a part human, part spirit, usually like a child.
Is that English culture?
Vibe. Yeah. Western culture. I actually always usually associate them with vampires.
Okay.
Yeah. So key themes in their works kind of include identity across like culture, gender, all that good stuff. I would say also like creative expression, godhood. There's godhood a lot of is godhood. I think they'd like that.
Yeah.
And then also kind of there's a lot about like the spirit slash body dichotomy that I feel like they like to touch on quite a lot. So lots of really, really interesting themes there. And then also, so for the episode, we read Freshwater, which was their debut. And it's a semi-autobiographical novel. We also read You Made a Fool of Death, which is a romance novel that they released, because we wanted to touch on some of these other genres a little bit.
Yeah, push ourselves.
Yeah. Challenge ourselves. And then we also read Dear Senthuran, which is more of a memoir.
Yeah, I believe. A black spirit memoir.
A black spirit memoir, thank you. Exactly. So, which one was your favourite, Amanda? How did you find this reading experience?
I actually think my favourite is Dear Senthuran. Because I think it's really important that we don't always have memoirs written by people at the end of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't know when people are the end of their lives. Yeah. First of all.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah. But secondly, I think it's important that when you reach a juncture, like where you feel like, actually, I've learned a lot and I've unlearned a lot.
Mm.
So even at that point, when you don't really know what the future looks like, to, share your story, I think it's really helpful for young people, for me.
Yeah.
And I like the structure of, right, so Dear Senthuran is written... So the story of their life, but as letters to their friends and family.
Which I love.
Yeah, I love that take on memoir. It reminds me of Ocean Vuong's.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
Yeah, and what the kind of intimacy that comes of talking to your friend or your family member about your life.
Mm-hmm. And also I feel like there's something so intimate, like inherently about letters as well.
And they're short. And so like a lot is captured. You don't feel like you have to say too much because the people who know you, they have some context. I mean, I think that they know that obviously we will also read it, but I don't know. They also, letters are never that, I feel like they're never that long. So yeah, I think that one is my favourite one, conceptually as well as, yeah, I just love memoir by young people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really interesting point, actually, because I feel like usually when someone is younger and they write like a memoir, I'm like, okay, a bit too soon. But then I say this as someone who greatly enjoyed like Julia Fox's like autobiography, though.
Yeah, so okay. I think another
it
one.
Is, yeah, exactly. So I guess it is a thing where, like you're saying, like exact, like some people have lived just such full lives that they have a lot to say, even at very young ages, and they've learned a lot. So I mean, who am I to judge? Just because mine would say absolutely nothing.
No, but even if you're if you didn't learn a lot but you learn one key lesson, tell us.
teach me. Yeah,
it doesn't need to be long. I mean, yeah, Dear Senthuran is not long. But yeah, I need to read that one that you said about Julia Fox. I like her.
Yeah, she is great.
Which one was your favourite?
So I think my favourite was definitely the Freshwater, which was also the first book of theirs that I ever read, obviously, because it was their debut. But I remember when it first came out.
Yeah,
I remember
got the American copies.
Yeah, exactly. We were so excited.
We won't wait for it to come to the UK.
Yeah, we were so excited. So yeah, I think Freshwater is still like my favourite. And even then, that one is also, as we said, semi-autobiographical. So it kind of follows Enoch Banjo, as they consider themselves to be. And it's kind of like narrated in first person, plural. So I think it's almost is also like a spirit memoir, if you think about it.
Yeah, right? I think so. But just more psychological.
Yeah. A lot more psychological than Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also a lot more like internal. Yeah. Than Dear Senthuran, because it's very much almost like the... what's the... Like the lead up...
So kind of like, I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah,
but I don't
like
say
the
it.
Prequel.
Yeah, the
like,
prequel to Dear. Yeah, because Dear Senthuran is I've gone through it and learnt.
Yeah,
and then Freshwater is like is happening.
Yeah, like I'm going through it and yeah. I'm trying to like figure this out myself, like as we go through it. Yeah. In this like yeah. in this very now. Yeah, exactly. And like working it out for myself, whereas like this and throwing, I feel like is more kind of like not explaining themselves to like other people, but like contextualizing, I feel like, almost their lives and their experiences yeah. for like their loved ones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I really liked Freshwater, like for that kind of like messy kind of a bit strange sometimes. I wouldn't say that also like not exactly fully 100% thought out. Mm. Like the protagonist is like in Freshwater is very much absent for a lot of it. Mm. I believe, because I feel like we don't actually get a chapter that's even narrated by like her personally until like well over half into the book.
Yeah, yeah.
And before that point, it's just been narration from the various spirits that inhabit kind of like her mind, her psyche, and her consciousness. So yeah, I feel like it's almost like an identity that isn't as solid or like as fully formed and as fully like fleshed as it feels in Dear Cynthorin.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually really loved Freshwater too, because I like that it really tested or like reshaped what reality can look like in different cultures.
Yes, let's talk about it.
Yeah, this thing that, you know, you're walking in the world with these spirits in your head. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or are they? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or in your body.
Yeah, in your body, in your head, whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that what we see is not the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that it was written in a way that these things that did feel very bizarre, mm-hmm. actually very normal.
Yeah,
very exactly. explainable. Exactly. Like, oh yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I know what this is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true. Like, I like how it's not, it's almost like she's not trying to, it's almost like they're not trying to convince you of this thing as like being something that's factual, but more just saying that I'm not here to convince you, this is just what it is, this is my experience.
Yeah.
And like my experiences and my perspective and my outlook is as valid as any other one.
Yeah.
And obviously I don't want to, because it obviously does explore gender like quite a lot, and I think it's just like for me, I felt like it's also like a really interesting exploration of like almost what like the almost like fragmentation of what like I imagine gender dysphoria might feel like to a person.
Mm.
Because essentially in the novel what happens is as a result of like the Ogbanje spirits, some of them present in different ways. I think there's like one spirit who manifests, Saint Vincent, I believe, who like is more kind of like male coded, and also kind of like allows Ada, who is the protagonist, to explore like what gender actually really means for them and how they want to present and like everything else, which is when they realize it kind of helps them in their exploration of their non-binary identity, I think. So I found that really, really fascinating, especially because I think in exploring what gender can look like in different cultures, I think it's interesting to me that there's almost a space in like Igbo culture or in African culture for these different identities or like these different manifestations of what gender can be and what gender can look like, even though it's something that is like massively almost like erased from history at this point. It's like Africans want to pretend as though there's never been any kind of like queerness or any kind of like non-binary identities in Africa until like, you know, the white man came or whatever, when like that isn't the case. It's been literally documented that there's loads of different instances across the continent where people did have these like non-traditional gender presentations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's just really interesting how people think it's so impossible for someone to be both masculine and feminine all at once, and that we can only be like, it just feels
one or the other.
Yeah, when the response sometimes feels really childish. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't even, why are you so angry?
Yeah, literally, why are you so upset at the concept of someone containing multitudes? I suppose, like, what is so,
it's harder to, I guess, certainty feels like a big thing in I say capitalism because we say, I just feel like we say it every episode, but
capitalism.
Capitalism.
Yeah.
It's a big problem.
Yeah. In our lives.
But I think it relies on certainty. Mm-hmm. And whenever
you, and categorization.
Yeah. And whenever you fall away from that, it gets angry.
Yeah. It does get very angry.
It gets confused. It gets, yeah, belligerent.
So that was definitely like my favorite, and I think it's still my favorite, like even now having, you know, read like more of their work. Yeah. I think I would still go back to Freshwater as like my ultimate Akweke Mezi like experience, just because I felt like, especially when I read it at the time, I'm like, we were both so excited about it. It was so fresh, so innovative. I'd never read anything like it at that point. And yeah, I was like, this is absolutely great.
Yeah.
Do you remember when we ran into them at Africa Rights,
goodness
like,
me.
Festival?
And
we were so excited.
It was, I literally
fangirling.
Gasped. Yeah. Big time. Are these copies signed? I think they might be.
Oh, yeah.
Because we did get them signed.
Yeah, we did get them signed. Yeah. I think my signed one might be at home though, actually.
Yeah, I think, because I think the UK cover, because we got the American covers because we were so rushed.
Yeah.
But the UK covers are orange.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, man. What a good time that was.
Yeah, and they were great.
They were so great.
Yeah, a really great speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Really great speaker.
Shout out to Africa Rights always.
Yeah. But generally we talked a bit about the first two books, but in terms of their life and they're so visible.
Mm-hmm.
I think their visibility has been so important for trans people, for non-binary people, and the fact that they're so prolific as well means that you can point to so many works by an African non-binary writer, and it's just like,
mm-hmm.
it's amazing.
Yeah.
the hard work, the work ethic.
Yeah, the work ethic. The work ethic the work is ethic. Crazy. I feel like they've literally put out a book every year for like the past 5 years or so.
Probably six. It's giving, you know how Beachy and Manchester had five kids in 6 years?
Yeah.
It's that.
Yeah. It's giving progeny. But
I think I really admire that quality in them.
Yeah, no, same. And actually, I think quite a few of their books have been picked up or like optioned for like screen as well. I know for a fact that You Made a Fool of Death with Your Beauty was picked up by Amazon Studios.
Stop.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that one.
You Made a Fool of Death.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about that one, because I really, really wanted you to read this one. I wanted to know your opinion.
I feel like it was very, what's that word that means it creates sides? Polarizing.
Polarizing.
Yeah.
100%.
I love when you describe the word and you actually get that.
Yeah. And it actually comes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% would agree. So polarizing. I remember when I first saw it on Bookstagram. It was definitely like really, really big on Bookstagram when it first came out, I think, because the cover's stunning, which, you know, they love on there. And it's a Florence and the Machine lyric. So I remember when I first like read the title, I was like, Florence?
Yeah, I was like, is that
Florence?
You writing? And also it made me think, did Florence authorize this? Like,
I'm
do you
sure,
need
right?
No, but do you actually need for that little word? I don't know if you actually need.
Yeah, that's true.
And it made me think, do you know Florence?
Yeah, would you? Are you guys friends? Do you think you'd have to reach out and be like, hey, I really like this lyric that you have in your song, can I make it my title?
I think it depends on how many words you use.
But I feel like it's so specific as well. Like, that is, I don't think I've ever seen that term outside of like that Florence and the
Machine
song.
I knew that, or thought it was Florence and the Machine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I wonder. But yeah, no.
Yes, the book.
Super, super polarizing. Yeah. I feel like even when it came out, everybody either loved it or hated it.
Yeah.
And guys, you know how I feel about romance. I've spoken about it so many times. Yeah.
We don't even speak about it because we don't talk about romance.
Yeah. And you know, I don't want to be like one of those girls who's just like, oh my God, I hate romance so much.
That's me. I want to be here.
Like, I just don't get it. Because it's like, I do get it. Like, I get it. Like, I get how that could be enjoyable for some people. And some people have like lighter, brighter hearts than I do. You know what I mean? So maybe that's enjoyable. But I thought I'd give it a try because obviously everything else I'd read by them up until that point had been like super experimental, like very
deep.
Yeah, very deep, like very
reckoning-ish.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was like, oh, how would they take on romance? Like, I actually might be interested to read that. Mm. So that is why I picked it up. And I'm not gonna lie, guys. Yeah, still not for me.
So, I mean, I would have never picked it up because I didn't like the cover.
Mm.
So I saw the cover and thought, no, come home with me.
Yeah. Not for my bookshelves.
Yeah, and I'm super, like, shallow and like that. Like, I might really like a book, but just iBook it if I think it's not coming.
Yeah.
But yeah, I expected to not like it because of all the things I saw, and I don't like romance. Mm-hmm. Not like I don't like romance in general. I don't like the way that it's done most of the time, mm-hmm. which is a bit sickly, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. Bit Disney Channel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's my only problem with romance. Mm-hmm. But I like love stories.
Okay. Yeah.
But I liked it.
Yeah.
But I've told Zipporah that I've been listening to it. I've been listening to it, not reading it. And I love it.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying it. Mm-hmm. It feels like watching something.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. I don't know, I'm listening and I'm imagining it more in my head. But the thing is, when I read, I imagine. But there's something about someone performing something with yes. different voices
yeah.
that just gives it a bit more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like a radio show at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm honestly really liking it. And I like how light it is mm-hmm. and how, like, it's not deep and it's...
I love how light it is and, like, two of the, like, main characters are literally unable to move on from grief. And yeah, dead partners.
I guess.
And you're like the levity.
Do you know what it is? I don't take romance novels seriously.
No, but this is what I was saying before, right? Because like my issue with it is always just kind of like, what are the stakes here?
And
what are the stakes?
And I didn't feel any.
There are none.
That's why I said. Yeah, it was like, light work. None.
Like, so if you walk away from the situation tomorrow, what is the issue going to be? You just don't have a boyfriend? There's no stakes there.
There's like a moral transcendence of it. Like, what do you learn?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But I didn't really get that from it, though. Mm-hmm. Like, really, I was getting this... Akwaeke is an amazing writer. Mm-hmm. I was getting these descriptions. Mm-hmm. I was getting... the voice actor who's doing the audio... I need to find that name.
Yeah.
I think the characters are... They're just so black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. I do like that about it.
Yeah it's really mm-hmm. and like the all, black, like black, the black, way they black. Dress, like everything about it for me just feels black and light.
Mm-hmm. And it's messy from the start. Yeah, as well. It's like so messy.
You know, Milan me in the whatever.
Yeah, that's the first line.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, let's go. And I'm turning right left in the car, it, and I'm like, yeah. Okay. Okay, Milan.
Is that how we're starting? No, yeah. Honestly,
it's
I remember
literally
when I
my pink
it up,
drapes
I
was like, dripping in the sink with the bubbles. And yeah, all the champagne I was drinking. I was like,
"Where are we? What's your name?"
And for me, yeah, it was giving like it was fun.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is.
It's
fun.
It's fun, and I don't mind like unlikable characters.
Same. Mm-hmm. I don't mind unlikable characters, but then I don't always like unlikable characters.
Agreed.
You know what
agreed,
I mean?
Agreed, yeah. Agreed. That's deep.
That's another one.
Come on.
But no, but like sometimes it's like some unlikable characters where I'm like, yeah, I can get behind that. Yeah. Like,
there's
I see where you're coming from.
There's a villainy that I can respect.
Exactly. I can respect that. And then there's some unlikable characters where I'm just like, oh...
What's her name? Faye?
Faye, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Bit inconsistent for me.
Yes.
Yeah. It was just right. My biggest flaw in like a character if I don't like them. Like, be consistent.
Yeah.
If you're going to be bad, be bad.
Yeah, just be consistent about who you are and what you're doing. And we'll get along fine. Okay. And like, I agree. I just did not take to Faye. I didn't like her. I didn't really like Nasir. I didn't like Aleem either.
You didn't like no one?
I didn't like any of them.
I thought you were going to stop me like, I didn't like Nasir. I didn't like no.
I liked Milan. Joy was cool. But like, other than that, like, I just didn't like them. So I didn't care about their little love triangle. I just felt like you literally could have gone for anyone. Like, speaking about Faye at this point, like, even if you don't like Nasir or like whatever, you could have just gone for anyone. Do you know what I mean? You didn't need to come into the situation and cause this much like so this much discord.
Yeah.
And I'm like, for what?
for me because I'm having a good time.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
For Amanda's reading pleasure.
Yeah, I just see, and I it kind of lends itself back to what you said. I love that they can write this stuff because for me this isn't literary fiction, but then I would say that Freshwater is.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly.
So it's okay,
different genre.
Yeah,
yeah, trying different things.
But obviously the writing quality is still actually great. Quite high. Yeah, so yeah, I liked it, guys.
Yeah, and I thought it was okay.
Now it's time for book recs, where we read your very specific book requests and try to help. What have we got?
So this listener says, "Hi girls, I teach English at a secondary school and I'm always looking for YA, which is young adult, recommendations that are outside of the Y and cis het experience, especially those which are about everyday teenage life, so that non-Y and non-cis het students can see themselves. Thank you very much," which I love. That's like a great, great ask. And I love that this is coming from a teacher as well. That like warmed my heart so much.
They're doing God's work.
God's work. There's no one who's had, or like in all of my schooling, learning, teaching experience, there's no one who's had as profound an impact on me as like almost every English teacher did for me. Like almost every English teacher that I had.
Yeah, same.
Like did.
And one science teacher. Yeah. Ooh. And my Spanish teacher.
Well, you did like the Spanish
and my
teacher.
History teacher.
So all of them.
I like school, guys.
Yeah. I just said I like to learn. But no, like, I absolutely love English teachers. Yeah. So thank you so much for listening. That makes me feel really warm inside. And we love this question because I think it's super, super, super important. Mm. And actually, funny enough, I think you saying that, like, one of the books that we should recommend for this is
Pet by Akweke Emezi, which is about a creature that comes to life, which I think is called Pet.
Oh.
Yeah. And a trans girl is the main character and has to deal with the problem.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I love that. So, which is like part of what we're saying about what is so great about how widely that Akweke Emezi writes, that they touched on like young adult fiction as well.
And yeah, you get a car.
Exactly. You get representation. You get representation. Everybody gets representation. So yeah, Pet by Akweke Emezi is a good one. I would also recommend Finding Falk Shore by Rachel Fetterotti, which is kind of this really, really... Well, I was going to say it's fun, but I don't think fun is the right word
really,
for
is
this
it weird?
Here. No, it's not weird, but it's essentially kind of, it's almost like, it's like super fun, super, well, it's not super fun, but like it's super fantastical and like mythical. It's about this girl who's going through like a really tough time in her life. I believe she's about 16 or so. Her brother's sick. And there's like other things, I think, that are just kind of like falling apart in her life. And then she takes the train. So it's set in London. She's a London girl. She's black. I think she's Nigerian. But so she takes the train and then she misses the last stop. And she somehow finds herself like in completely new like dimension and like world. Exactly. Called like Falk Shore. Yeah.
I love that.
Which is like really cool. So I just really loved the thought of like, you know, missing your last train on the underground and finding yourself in like a completely different...
I love that it's set in London.
Exactly. And I feel like that's such like a cool and kind of like fun adventure for like a London child as well. So I really, really like that one. So yeah, I would say Finding Falk Shore by Rachel Fetterotti. And then who else? What else?
Another one that comes to mind actually is Under the Ujula Trees by Chinelo Okparanta. And that's about, is it set, I know it's set in Nigeria, but is it set in Igbo land or?
No idea.
I don't remember.
I do think she is Igbo though.
You do think? Her name, Chinelo, feels, yeah. Igbo. But yeah, it's about these two women who fall in love. It's kind of like a coming of age story.
Yeah.
They know each other growing up and then you kind of follow their lives. So that's a really good one, actually.
That's a really good one. And then actually also I would recommend Children of Blood and Bone by Tommy Adeyemi. It is Tommy Adeyemi. I think the third one is coming out soon. So that's like a series. I've only read the first two, but it's very much like adult fantasy. Sorry, young adult fantasy. Adult fantasy. It's giving porn.
like straight away.
Yeah. I'm sorry. So it's like a young adult fantasy, and it's about this girl who, you know, it's essentially like a chosen one type story narrative. But it's really, really fun. I loved reading that one. And the third one is coming out soon. And I know like a lot of people are really, really excited about that one.
Mm.
So a great time to kind of get into it. I think the second one is called like Children of Virtue and something. But yeah.
I haven't read the first one.
You would love it.
Yeah, everyone says.
You would love it.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's so good.
I should.
Yeah, you should read it. But yeah, hopefully you like those recommendations. And we hope that your students would be really interested in this, in them as well. Yeah, let us know.
Takeaways. So what was your takeaway?
I think my main takeaway from Akweke is, and like their works in general, is actually just like living life by like on your own terms, or like in your own terms and in your own way. I think one thing that you can tell from the way that they, I don't know, like the way that they express themselves through their art is that, like, I feel like there's just a lot of joy there.
Mm.
And the ability to express yourself and like your true self and who you are, and like to really claim your space in this world. So I think that's like one of my biggest lessons from Akweke. Probably not exactly from their books, but just like from them as a person.
Yeah.
Their life and their works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about you? What's your biggest takeaway?
I think it's quite similar to yours, like their intentionality. It feels like everything is so important, from like their flesh body to the house that they live in to, like, I feel like when you're prolific, it's like you really have to wake up every day and say, I'm gonna do this.
Yeah, I'm doing it.
And that, yeah, everything feels important to them.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing feels like out of place or extra.
Mm-hmm.
Everything feels like has its home.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just think, yeah, very like fearless kind of person where maybe they have fear, but it feels like they're doing it anyway.
Yeah, and I feel like they probably do have fear. And I think from like reading most of their novels, especially with kind of like how autobiographical they are, you can tell that they have lots of fears. But I think it's like the way that they face them and like the way that they almost like embrace their fears and like the things that like might be kind of like dark and ugly about us, like inside, like in terms of like fears and like insecurities, or like, you know, the way that the world can make us feel about ourselves. And I feel like they have this like incredible way of like embracing those things and like turning them into weapons against the world instead of it being like an injury to them, you know.
Yeah,
so like I find that very fascinating about them. So I guess that's also another one of my takeaways.
Thank you for joining us for another episode. Join us next week for our last episode of season 3, Bodies of Work.
Oh my God.
We'll be talking about Zadie Smith.
Wow, Northwest finest.
Yeah, bring it home.
No, we're taking it home.
We're taking it home.
It's going home.
Literally.
It's coming home. For the last episode. Yeah, we're taking back to Northland. Yeah.
North London.
North London, baby. North Wheezy. So definitely tune in for that next week. And in the meantime, you can find us on Instagram and TikTok at The Stacked Pod. And you can also find us on Substack.
Stacked Weekly?
Yes, a Stacked Weekly, where we do little weekly digests of the episode.
So don't forget to like and follow us wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Leave us reviews as well. We love the reviews.
Love the reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And that now has been Stacked.
Yeah. Until next time, guys, don't forget to pick up a book.